This is the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast brought to you by Art Wiederman, CPA with Ide Bailey. Whether it's taxes and investing or planning wisely, Art is the expert to make your dental practice profitable. At Ide Bailey, what inspires you inspires us. We provide a suite of accounting and advisory services dedicated to the total care of your practice. Visit our website to access our tools and resources tailored for dentists, idebailey.com/dentist. That's idebailey.com/dentist. This podcast is distributed with the understanding that Art Wiederman, CPA, and Ide Bailey, LLP are not rendering legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Listeners should consult with their business advisors before acting on any of the information or opinions shared. If you have questions and or feedback, make sure to email Art over at awiederman@idebailey.com. That's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at E-I-D-E-B-A-I-L-L-Y.com. You can also give Art a call at 657-279-3243. Without further delay, here's your host, Dental CPA Art Wiederman.
And hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast with Art Wiederman, CPA. I'm your host, Art Wiederman. Welcome to my podcast. We are in our seventh year of this journey, and it has been a labor of love. I have met so many wonderful, wonderful people in the dental profession, and I have heard from hundreds and hundreds of you who listen to the podcast on a regular basis. And I love interviewing dentists. I mean, the dentists that I interview on this podcast just have a great concept of what it takes to be successful. And the dentist I have that I'm going to be speaking to today is Dr. Amrita Patel. And if you don't know Dr. Patel, she will be coming to a dental society near you sometime soon. She is a practicing dentist in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. She is a consultant for the California Dental Association and has done the Now and Next program, which was wildly successful, and she's speaking all over the country. And Dr. Patel and I met recently, and she is amazing. And today we're going to talk about a topic that I haven't had a chance to talk about a lot, which is student loan debt strategies for dentists. Now, everybody knows that if you go to dental school, we're talking, you know, $300,000 to $600,000. If you go to specialty school, it could be more. Unfortunately, interest rates are not 3% like mortgages were a couple of years ago or dental loans were. Student loan debt interest rates are high, 6, 7, 8%. So there are strategies of how we can get you through this. We're going to be talking to new dentists who are just starting their journey. We're going to be talking to dentists who have student loan debt and what to do with that. So we will get to Dr. Patel in a moment. I want to thank my wonderful partner in this journey, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, www.decisionsindentistry.com. Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, for those of you who don't know, is the premier dental clinical magazine in the country. They offer over 140 continuing education courses at a very reasonable price. They also have a new dental marketing company called DDS Media Pro. So go to www.decisionsindentistry.com. We are now in the summer months when this podcast will be published. So if you did not have a great experience with your April 15th taxes and not getting the love and care from your CPA that we give to our clients here at Ide Bailey, please give me a call, 657-279-3243, or email me at A Wiederman, that's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at IdeBailey.com. We will be doing the Business of Dentistry webinar series. We did the first one with Dr. Sherilyn Sheets and Ben Tuinay a couple months ago, and we will be continuing that one. We'll have some more information for you on that as the time comes up. And again, please tell all your friends about our podcast. We got a lot of great stuff coming up on the podcast.
Be sure to check out our new Ide Bailey podcast, Ebb and Flow, a business podcast providing inspired insight on issues and trends the middle market faces. Hear unique business stories, get answers to frequently asked and unasked questions, and understand business topics that matter to you. Available now on your favorite podcast platform.
Let me get to my guest. My guest is Dr. Amrita Patel. Dr. Patel, as I mentioned, is a practicing dentist in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. She's a nationally known speaker. And again, we're going to talk today about student loan debt. So, Dr. Patel, welcome to the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So, start off by telling us about your professional journey. You've got a little bit of a different journey than many of the dentists we've talked to because of all the speaking and consulting that you do with dentists. So tell us a little bit about your journey.
Sure. So I went to dental school to follow in the footsteps of my father. So I'm a New York girl. I know that you were also born in New York. I went to NYU for dental school.
Nice.
And then I did a general practice residency immediately afterwards. Like in New York, you have to do one of those in order to get licensed, some sort of residency. And I went right into private practice with my father. So he's an endodontist, and then I'm a general dentist. And, you know, we realized that the communities that we were in, there was demand and there was growth and potential to expand our business. And so we built a group of family-owned, he's the sole owner, specialty group practices where we do not refer most procedures out. We try to provide that service to our patients that they don't sort of have to be turfed around to the best of our ability. And kind of grew that all over Westchester County, New York, which again is where I was born and raised. Aside from that, I was very involved in the American Dental Association and specifically the New York State Dental Association. Sure. So I chaired the New York State Dental Association New Dentist Committee and got sent to a fair number of residency programs and dental meetings around New York to speak, which is kind of my jump start into the second part of my career, which has taken off in kind of on a trajectory I didn't sort of see coming, but it's very exciting. You told your audience that I'm in Sioux Falls, and what's a New York girl doing in the middle of the country?
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah. So 3 years ago, I got sent to the South Dakota Dental Association annual meeting to help with some programming. And the State Dental Association very nicely sent their state's president-elect to pick all the speakers up at the airport. And we got married a year and a half ago.
Nice.
Yeah. So I have a dental association, dental organization, dental meeting love story.
Oh, well, so, you know what? As long as your husband's okay with that, we're good to go, right?
Exactly. Yep. It took some getting used to the New York girl and the New York attitude in the Midwest. But so my husband is a general dentist as well. And he has a large practice here in Sioux Falls with some partners. But aside from all of that, kind of like what you said, what really brings me a lot of joy is paying my blessings forward to this profession that has given so much to my family and I. And the way that I do that is helping to educate the next generation of dentists and the existing new dentists and new practice owners on all the things they don't really talk about in dental school. And managing debt is definitely one of those.
Oh my goodness. It is. And, you know, unfortunately, I mean, I've spoken at all of the local dental schools here in Southern California, USC, UCLA, Loma Linda, Western. And unfortunately, the dental schools, they just don't have the time and the resources to have a whole bunch of classes on the business side of what you're going to have to do when you get out. So they get me once or twice a year, and that's about it. And maybe they get you.
Yep.
So I think it's wonderful what you're doing to pay it forward and to give back to this wonderful profession. And I say it all the time in the podcast, Doctor, is that dentists are some of the most caring, wonderful humans I have ever met. They are just as a food group, if I may call you a food group, as a food group, you're just, I mean, when I talk to them, I've had the chance to refer some of my friends and they are just, oh my God, what can I do to help? And it's just wonderful. So I'm very glad you're doing this. Talk a little bit about what you do with the California Dental Association.
Yeah. So I work as a consultant for the California Dental Association, specifically for early career dentist programming and engagement and education. So we did a very successful program all around California called Now Plus Next. Yes. Last year, the topic was demystifying dental benefits. So talking about dental insurance and how that works and how to make it best work in your practices, no matter whether if you're an associate or you're an owner. And then this year, our topic is innovative patient communication strategies. So kind of meeting people where they are and making sure that you've got buy-in from your team and how to lead that team. And we're kind of in the midst of working on topics for next year. But we also do a lot of programming for component dental societies. We actually do some out-of-state programming. So we did some analyses and realized that there's certain areas in the country that have a lot of students, dental students that are from California, where they go to school in, you know, whether it's New York or Boston or Arizona, and then they come back to California. So we've actually taken our roadshow, if you will, to New York and Boston and Arizona to bring some of this content to those graduating dental students to say, hey, we're here for you. These resources aren't something that you need to go find on the internet. In the CDA has it. So, you know, something that's very unique about California that I don't know if a lot of your kind of the people that hear this know, or something that they definitely should know, is that the California Dental Association is the only dental association in the entire country that has a dedicated practice support team. So you have a question about dental benefits, you have a question about HR, compliance, you know, how to manage something going on in your team, you can pick up the phone and there's someone on this practice support team that can help you. And no other state organization has that. So those are the people that I work with.
And that's why I have the CDA folks like yourself, like Matt Nelson and Lisa Greer and Michelle Coker. Yep. And we actually had Dr. Max Martinez, who's, yep, I've known him for years, and he's the current president, one of the most wonderful humans you're ever going to meet. So again, doctors, I want to encourage you. This is not a podcast to make you join your dental society, but you should join your local dental society. Yes. And the CDA if you are not members, because there are a lot of benefits you have. Let's get to our topic, doctor. Good place to start is the beginning, which is where I usually start. We have people listening to the podcast who are either going to start in dental school. We have dentists who, like your dad, had a daughter who became a dentist, right? And have children, other relatives or friends about to start the journey. Talk about the options for dental students who, you know, to use to borrow money to go to dental school. I mean, there are, yep, lots of different options. So I'll let you start talking and we can start the conversation there.
Yeah, so that's a great question. They're very important. Primary sources of borrowing are going to be federal student loans. And there's two types in there. So there's your unsubsidized, your direct unsubsidized loans, which are available to graduate and professional students. And then your grad plus loans, which cover all the additional costs that those unsubsidized loans don't cover. There are obviously private loans, but you should try to exhaust your federal options first, largely because they come with more borrower protection. So you've got different repayment plans, and then depending on where you're going to practice and, you know, in the current climate, as of right now, it still exists, you know, what kind of forgiveness options that come with this, depending on if you're going to go work in an underserved area.
Yeah. So there's a lot of these. So let's dig into a little bit of this, because this is the meat of what I want to talk to people about. A lot of the dentists who come out of dental school, they use the IBR, the income-based repayment program, which a lot of the dentists they know is, you know, the 10% of your income. So talk about the income-based repayment program for somebody who's coming out. Because obviously, you know, if you're borrowing $500,000, $600,000, and we'll talk about the interest rates in a little bit, to have to pay back when you first get out of school, where you may only have a job 2 days a week, or maybe you're not making as much money and you're not in your own practice. So I know there's a pay, P-A-Y-E, and a repay. Talk about how we get started with you know, the options of how can we pay these loans back?
Yeah, and you brought up something really important, which is like those income-driven plans. I think one of the big differences between the payee and the repayee is that the repayee does consider your spouse's income, because a lot of people will file their income taxes separately for a variety of different reasons. But when you're going to do your calculations for those loan payments, that repayee does consider your spouse's income. Payee has a monthly payment cap. Repayee bases payments on your income, even if it does increase significantly. I will say that, like you said, for that payee, it caps your monthly payments at 10% of your income. And then right now that forgiveness is 20 years. There is a third plan. It's kind of sitting in limbo right now, that save plan. It covers more of that unpaid interest, protects more of your income, but we don't really know what the outcome of that is going to be. That the future of that is kind of a big question mark right now. So
go back to, okay, so if I go on the income-based repayment plan, the pay one allows us to pay it back using 10% of our income. And can I stay with 10% of my income for 20 years and then the rest of it is forgiven? How does that work?
Yeah. So what happens is that it's going to be 10% of your discretionary income, but never more than you'd pay on a standard 10-year plan. When you get to that 20 years, and I think this is what's really important for people to hear, it doesn't just disappear into the ether. That balance is treated as taxable income. So it's what people are calling the tax bomb. So if you are choosing to go on a plan like that, and assuming that plan is going to be around, right, for the next 20 years, you need to be aware that there's going to be taxes, income taxes due on that forgiven amount. It doesn't just go away. It's not like a traditional forgiveness.
Well, and the other thing would be, depending on what the interest rate is and depending on the type of loan, you know, if someone is paying, you know, 10%, let's say, I'm going to say that the, I hate to call anybody average, but the, let's say the median dentist who comes out of school is going to be making about $150,000 to $200,000 a year. That's probably a fair number,
yep.
You think? Okay.
Yep.
So they're making payments of, and I'm going to do, as my audience knows, I'm required by law to do simple math on my podcast because I'm a CPA. So let's say that I've got $500,000 of debt at, let's just say 6%. That's $30,000 a year is the interest. So if I'm paying on $180,000 and I pay $18,000, am I not even paying the interest? Is that an issue?
Right. So the deal with the interest subsidy is that the government will pay 100% of the unpaid interest that accrues on the subsidized loans in the first 3 years of repayment. And that's for your payee plan. For repayee, it'll be the same thing, but it will also pay 50% of the unpaid interest that accrues on those subsidized loans after the first 3 years and on unsubsidized loans during the whole length of the repayment period, which for repayee is 25 years for the purposes of this podcast, because we're talking about graduate school loans. And so that's the other thing, that you are making small payments, but that interest is accruing. So you might get 10 or 15 years into making payments and you owe more than, way more, double potentially what you borrowed, depending on what the interest rates are.
And then if you forgive it, you could have a $600,000 tax hit, which would cost someone probably about, depending on the state you're in, could be as much as a quarter of, and here in California, be probably $250,000. So that may not be the best way to go. What are the current interest rates on student loans?
Yeah, I think, you know, I looked it up and the unsubsidized loans for grad students are about 7%, a little bit over 7%. Grad plus loans are about 1% higher. They change every July 1st. So if you're planning for the future, keep an eye out. They're not static, but that's what they are right now.
And understand, folks, you know, you say, well, wait a minute, why doesn't the government help us? Because this is our careers. Well, these are basically unsecured loans. When you go and borrow money on a home, the bank has got that home, that brick and mortar that they can take as security. But the bank here, or the government here, they have nothing. They just have you as the person that we hope is going to pay these loans back. What is the difference between a subsidized and an unsubsidized loan?
So basically what that means is when you have a subsidized loan, the government pays the interest while you're in school. However, graduate and dental students aren't eligible for subsidized loans. Those are largely reserved for undergrads. So dental students are getting these unsubsidized loans, so that interest is starting to accrue as soon as that loan gets disbursed and it capitalizes, which means that it's getting added to the loan balance if you don't pay it off during school. And I mean, dental school for all of us is just I don't know, 12-hour days if you're lucky, right? You're largely not getting a job to pay off your loans during school.
Not at all. I mean, you're doing is school. You did it. So
yes.
So we have a young dentist and they're looking at their options. They don't want a $600,000 plus hit 20 years from now. What do most people do? They go on the IBR and then do they change? Can you change your payment method?
Yeah, you can change your payment method, but what you can't do is go back and forth. So if you've got loans, federal loans, and you've done an IDR, payee, repay, whatever, and you decide to privately refinance for a better interest rate, you can't then go back to the federal student loan programs, which I think it was really important during COVID because there was a 3-year pause on all federal student loan payments. And so people were able to make huge dents in their loan balances potentially. But if you had refinanced to a private company, you didn't get that same option. You know, if you're in a position where you're working in an underserved area or you're planning on doing public service loan forgiveness, you need to stay with that federal loan repayment program in order to be eligible for that.
Right. So talk about if someone wants to do community service or not-for-profit or work on a, say, an Indian reservation.
Yeah.
And they want to, I think there's a 10-year forgiveness on that. How does that work?
Yeah. So if you work for a nonprofit or a government organization, like a public health clinic or a federally qualified health center, even some dental schools, and you make 120 qualifying payments under one of those income-driven repayment plans that we talked about, your remaining loans can be forgiven tax-free after 10 years, which is the big key, is that you don't have that tax bomb. You're not going to owe anything on that potential $600,000 that we talked about earlier. You know, it's a really good option if you're early in your career or if you're passionate about that kind of work, if you're passionate about serving underserved communities. But, you know, you have to decide if you want to be a practice owner, what that's going to look like, because you might be working for 10 years in an area that you're not going to then stay in. So you're going to have to move potentially, make new contacts, kind of start a little bit all over. So it really depends on what trajectory you have mapped out for yourself.
So if someone goes on this income-based repayment program, they're probably not going to stay on it for their entire life because they're not going to even be able to pay the interest and their balance is going to go up. So what do most dentists do, Dr. Patel? Do they just start making the regular amortized payment as they start making more money in their careers or as they buy a practice? What do most folks do?
You know, I will tell you that I think one of the best ways to get out of debt, and you can probably speak to this more than I can, is to be a business owner, to be a practice owner.
Yes.
You know, there's lots of tax advantages that come with being a practice owner. And obviously, you are the captain of your ship and you get to control the way things go. As a W-2 associate, you don't have a lot of those benefits. So I would say that there's a lot of people that have decided to just make larger payments as they become practice owners and start to see that income, you know, that practice's income start to rise. There's a lot of people that refinance into private options because the private interest rates, especially in the last few years, have been so much better than these federal interest rates. There's people that got, you know, 1% and 2% rates. So at that point, you might as well make the minimum payment on that while throwing as much money as you can at your investments, retirement, and growing your practice because that interest rate is so low.
And that's why, doctors, we would strongly, strongly encourage you to sit down with a financial planner, someone who understands this, someone who understands the loan repayment options and a long-term plan. Because again, you could just go along. I mean, doctor, they could just go along their merry way and pay their 10% of their income for their whole careers and maybe not have it forgiven, but they're not going to make a dent in those loans, right? Probably.
Right. And there are a very select group of people, I think, that choose that path where financially it makes sense. And let me paint that scenario for you from a dentist perspective. Of course, you're the professional, but you know, if you have a high income spouse, you know, potentially a business owner or someone that is making a lot of money, and you're in a position where you're working part-time, or maybe you own a business and you're making significantly less money, you're not working all the time, and you're filing your taxes, married filing separately, and that situation works the best for you, and you've obviously gotten professional advice, and you are able, or your spouse is able, to save a lot of money to make that payment, that tax bomb payment, then maybe it does make sense to drag the loans up. But yep. That's a very specific scenario for a very small number of people.
Right. So the again, most people start with the IBR.
Yep.
And they make payments. And then at some point, they need to start amortizing these payments. So yep. Let's talk about the advantages or disadvantages of going to a private company and refinancing these federal loans.
Well, largely, I would say it's because the interest rates are so much better. Okay. You know, sometimes potentially, even in today's climate, half of the numbers that we've talked about. Yeah. And at that point, that's significant on some of these very large loan balances. So that would be, I think, probably the number one reason to go, kind of like when you refinance your mortgage, right? It's the same sort of thing. You're able to save potentially a lot of money. And then if you can make larger payments and there is no prepayment penalty, that's great for everyone.
Yeah, see, I think, doctors, my advice, which is what I'm giving you now, is pick a date that you want your student loans paid off. It could be, you know, is it going to be 5 years? I have doctors say, I want all my debt paid off. I don't like debt. Well, the fact of the matter is nobody likes debt. But debt is how you buy your first house. Debt is how you buy your first practice. Debt is how you buy your dental building. This is what debt is there for. What debt is not there for is to live beyond your means and run your credit card balances up to who knows what. So what you want to do is, again, sit down with someone. We can help you with this. Is sit down and say, okay, I'm 35 years old. I want to be done with these student loans when I am 55. I want to be done in 20 years. That's a very realistic scenario. Okay. I'm going to pay them off. So I've been paying, you know, $2,500 a month on the income-based repayment or $2,000 a month. I own a practice now. I'm doing much better. And I want to pay $3,500 a month. That's less than one crown a month, doctors. That's the way I always like to think of it. And now I'm going to go pay off those student loans. I have a plan. I don't have to worry about them. If interest rates drop further, we can look at refinancing the federal loans to the non-federal loans. Obviously, if you are looking at the 10-year plan of making income, if you're on the 10-year plan and you're going to work for an underserved community, you make the minimum possible payments you can, and after 10 years, you're done, right? I mean, that's an easy scenario, right?
Right, exactly. Okay.
All right. So, you know, we talked about that. So, you know, let's talk a little bit about how you talk about budgeting and planning, because I mean, we talked about the different options here. We have somebody in mid-career. All right. They owe $300,000. I mean, they can either put together a 20-year payoff plan. They can refinance at a lower rate. But at the end of the day, unless you want that tax bomb 20 years from now, and they can plan for that, they need to come up, you know, just run a simple amortization schedule, right, to figure out how can we do this? Look at the private options and decide, is that better for you, right? I mean, that's pretty much what you would tell people.
Yeah, and I think so much of this is not feeling like you have to keep up with the Joneses, right, for lack of better words. I mean, what you see on social media and what you see everyone else doing, you don't know what their lifestyle is like. Maybe they're up to their eyeballs in credit card debt, right? So everyone's got their own path, and you have to figure out what works the best for you in your situation, whether it's public service loan forgiveness or staying on a long repayment plan or refinancing into a private option. So that's why it's really important to look at your own budget and look at where you're at and figure out what your, like you said, what your date is or what your number is and how to get there.
Okay. So you were talking a little bit earlier about, you know, a dentist running their practice and having a plan. Talk about, because we're going to get into this for the rest of our discussion, is how important is it for a dentist to have a budget and to plan out their debt repayments? I mean, I know you speak about this a lot to your audiences.
Yeah. You know, all debt's not created equally, as we know. So that's why it's really important to make sure you know where your money is going. That's why it's really important to make sure that you save for retirement, right? That's not something that anyone tells you about when you're in school. You know, what's the joke that the eighth wonder of the world is compounding interest?
Yep. Yeah, it might be number one or number two, but go ahead.
Yeah. Forget the Taj Mahal.
Exactly.
You know, that's an important principle that you should really sort of live by, right? The more that you can invest and save, and the more that you can frankly invest in yourself, because you're your own best investment. So bettering yourself, CE, your practice, whatever that is, that requires money. And you need to have money laid aside for that. And you need to have a plan. You need to know where your money's going. There's lots of different apps you can use to track that. You know, when you go to buy a practice, you're going to have a note that you have to pay. If you need to buy a scanner or a CBCT, that's a large payment that you're going to be making every month through your business. And so you have to plan for those things and then prioritize what you're going to pay off first and what you're going to kind of run out for the length of the loan.
So I think, doctors, it's really important, and Dr. Patel, it's really important that every year a dentist does an annual practice and personal budget. And unfortunately, I cannot get my clients, and I'm generalizing here. There are some of you that have done that with me over the years. I can't get someone to commit a day to sit down. I have a spreadsheet. This is what we grossed last year. We did $900,000 in the practice. It's a nice practice, okay? And now this year, how are we going to do better? Okay, well, we're going to start doing some specialty work, or we're going to do some marketing, or we're going to work on our uncompleted treatment plans. All these things. So our goal is to do an additional 10%. Don't ever say, doctor, I'm going to do 50% more in my practice. That's not realistic, right?
But
then we do a plan, and then we got to figure out. It's my life is a math problem. I've said this for 7 years on this podcast. And so we have to figure out how can we save in all these buckets: retirement bucket, children's college education bucket, student loan bucket, a bucket for improvements, a bucket to buy up. I mean, all these kinds of buckets. Now, you wrote a great article that I read for the Journal of the Michigan Dental Association called "The New Professional Debt Repayment Strategies: What New Dentists Should Know." And once I read this article, I'm looking, as I said, you should rename the article. It should be "What All Dentists Should Know," not just "What New Dentists Should Know," because it's great advice. So in this article I'm reading that you wrote, Dr. Patel, you said that the obligations should be prioritized based on several factors. So start talking about debt that have higher interest rates. How should a dentist pay off those loans?
Yeah, I think not all debt is created equal. High interest loans, especially private ones, should be your top priority. And if you've got extra cash each month, you should be making extra payments towards those higher interest loans, because that will reduce the total interest you'll pay over time. You know, the other thing that you have to look at is what's my return on my investments, and what's the interest rate I'm paying on some of this high interest debt, right? There's a place where that crosses over. I think it's about 7%, where it doesn't make sense to hold the balances and pay the minimum amounts and throw more money into your investments. Obviously, that's very personal, but I think it's important to start at the highest interest number and then work your way down.
Right. And again, I just want to tell you that credit card debt is the devil. I have told my audience, Dr. Patel, for many years, my wife and I, we each have a credit card. It is tied to our same personal checking account. Every month on the 19th of the month, the bank pulls the full balance every month on my credit card debt for 25 years, probably maybe even longer than that. We have not had credit card debt. I would cut off my left arm before I would have credit card debt, because what happens with my clients is it's just so easy. They go out and they take out a bunch of credit cards, and then they transfer balances. And then the next thing you know, you have five or six credit cards and you're making the minimum payment because you can't afford to not make the minimum payment. And the balances keep going. And the average credit card interest rate right now, doctors, is well over 21%. It's high. And the reason it's high is because people default on them. So I think having a strategy to get out of debt, but specifically having a strategy, I like one personal credit card, one business credit card with a balance maximum every month that allows you to pay it off. Now, there are going to be extraordinary expenses, like you say, the CBCT machine or a digital scanner or a CAD/CAM machine where you're going to spend $100,000. That's a different conversation, and that's more about return on investment. So let's talk about debt consolidation strategies. And I know there's a product called a federal direct consolidation loan, which merges eligible federal education loans into a fixed rate using weighting average of existing loans. How do you, when you're talking to doctors, how do you suggest they consolidate loans?
So if you want one monthly payment, or you want to make it easier for yourself in terms of tracking things, or if you need to qualify for some of these forgiveness programs or IDR plans, then it makes sense. But if you consolidate, then any progress you've made towards public service loan forgiveness or the, you know, 20 or 25 years gets reset. So you need to make that decision pretty early on about how you're going to consolidate. And then, like we said, if you decide to go from a federal plan into a private plan, you cannot then go back if you change your mind.
Right. So if you're looking for forgiveness, or you want to do the 20-year forgiveness, and you're going to save the money to pay the taxes, and you're going to have the tax bomb, once you go to the private loan, you cannot do that. So you talk in your article about two popular debt repayment strategies. Obviously, you are a New Yorker, because one of them is a snowball and one of them is an avalanche, and it snows a lot in New York. I remember I used to dig out the snow from my dad's 1965 Buick Skylark in our apartment in Brooklyn. So yeah, I know how that works. But let's talk about those. So the first one is the snowball method. How does that work?
So that just means that you pay off your smallest loans first, regardless of the interest rate. So it's kind of about the momentum. You know, you get that quick hit of a kind of adrenaline, endorphins, right? And that theoretically keeps you motivated to stick with your plan.
Right. And then so that loan, we're paying it off, and then we pay off the smaller ones and then the bigger ones. And once we pay off that, then you have that payment plus the extra payment to go to the next one. And that's how we do a snowball. And that is a method. And that takes some concentration, that takes discipline. And it's just like another bill in your practice, is having a methodology for debt. You will never be completely out of debt, folks. You will always buy a car, unless you've made enough money that you can pay cash for cars. You will always, you might be buying a new house. You're going to have a house debt. But my goal for you is figure out a date. One of Art's golden rules, and I have about a dozen of them, and I've done shows on them, is pick a date to retire. Pick it right here and right now. And that date, doctor, might be 55 or 60 years old. And if you're 30, if you're 40, and you're in the highest earning potential that you're going to be at, but you're also in the meat of raising children and spending money and maybe putting kids through college, if you have a plan that's laid out so that when you're 55 or when you're 60, that these debts are paid off. You're going to have other debts, and you don't run up credit card debt, that's a great way to do that. Now, we talked about snowballs, and you get enough snowballs, you end up with an avalanche, right? So The second method is an avalanche method. Maybe do you ski? You're in South Dakota. Are you a skier?
I am not. My husband is a big skier. I never learned. And at this point, frankly, I'm a little bit scared to learn. However,
it is fun. My knees are shot. So my skiing days are over. Golf is my thing, as my audience knows. But talk about the avalanche. Yeah, I love golf.
Golf in the nice weather. So the avalanche method just means that you are going to go to pay off the loans with the highest interest rate first. Obviously, mathematically, you can speak to this more than I can. That's probably the most efficient, because you'll pay less interest overall.
Yes,
and it's just that simple.
I agree. So what is the first step for a dentist who is going to, they want to start figuring out how to get out of debt? They just feel like every month they're making minimum payments on everything. I mean, what do you tell people? I'm sure you talk to people all over the country who come to you and say, I feel like I have an avalanche coming on me and there's snowballs coming at me. Where do we get started?
I think you need to make a plan, and I think it's not just a financial plan. You need to take a good hard look at yourself and figure out what you want from this life, right? Yep. You have the tools. School has equipped you with the ability to make a good living, no matter where it is that you end up, whether it's New York or South Dakota or anywhere right. in between, for that matter. You know, you have the capability to go out and learn more. Dentistry, I think, is still one of the best small businesses in healthcare out there. We have largely managed to stay that way. It's great that dentistry is this profession that does still get passed down through the generations, I think. Yes. But you have to decide. You know, there's a lot of people that say, I don't ever want to own a business. I want to be able to go to work, show up, leave, and that's it. And maybe that's you, right? There's other people that say, you know, I love the adventure and I want to be able to go explore new places. And maybe I want to be in an area that doesn't have as much care, that has an access to care issue. Maybe that's you, right? Well, maybe you come out and I talk to more and more dentists that say this to me actually now is I want to be a business owner. I want to own a practice. I want to grow. I want to expand. I want to scale. So you have to decide which one of those you are without forgetting that there's lots of options in dentistry. You can go to academia. You can go into research. But figure out what it is that you want from your life and figure out what your goals are and then kind of reverse engineer it. Right? Dentists can be really myopic. I'm sure you know this better than me. We tend to miss the forest for the trees sometimes.
Well, you are one. And my joke, and again, I am so proud to be a servant to the dental profession, but I can spot a dentist, Dr. Patel, at 100 yards. I mean, I can. And and that's a compliment. I love all of you listening to my podcast, but I want you to all be able to have the financial ability to retire, to put your kids through college, to take a nice vacation. I don't want you to have to worry about, oh my God, I've got these 7 payments. And, but we haven't had a vacation in 4 years. I mean, I'm sure you hear that on the lecture pulpit also, right?
Yeah, I do. And it's, you know, and then people look at me and they say, well, how do you manage your life, right? You're here, you're there, you're doing all these things. And the truth of the matter is that when we're home, we have a pretty simple life. I mean, I remember distinctly watching my mother pack my father's lunch every day and going, Mom, he's a doctor. Like, they all eat out every day. And she was like, no, it's way better for him that I'm doing this. And now, as a wife that packs her husband's lunch every day, I mean, you know, I see people come into the office and they're buying lunch, right? $20, $30, $40,
$50 oh, yeah.
of coffee and food every single day. We don't do that. And so, again, you have to look at your life. And so when you see, again, what you see on social media or what you see people doing, they're making adjustments in their lives to be able to do what they're doing. Dentistry will give you a great life. It will reward you greatly for all of the work that you put into it. But you just have to make sure that you don't spend your whole career trying to keep up with the next person. You know, someone gave me a piece of advice when I first got engaged that we live by now, which is we take all of the money that's left over on my end every month at the end of the month and throw it into our joint post-tax retirement account. Investment account. So we have a joint investment account. So he contributes to his 401k, I contribute to mine. And then all the money that's left over in the pot at the end of the month, I have a Vanguard account set up and it just goes in there into boring mutual funds.
Oh, but you know what? It's funny. Folks, I have a financial advisor. I'm so busy with everything that I'm doing. I mean, I know the markets. I don't manage my own money. You know, I mean, Dr. Patel, you don't work on your own teeth, right?
Right.
Okay. So we were talking about, you know, and I was going over my plan with him. And he said, you've got this thing covered. You've got this nailed. And I said, so there are people that don't have this nailed. I mean, I knew the answer. And he says, no. We have people that are, you know, that need $750,000 to $1.5 million a year. And I said, what could one possibly do with all of that money? And they said, by the way, that's after tax. Well, they have to pay the crew for their yacht and they have to pay the cleaning crew for their home and they have to pay for their 6 luxury cars. I said, you're kidding me. He said, no, I'm not kidding you. So again, dentistry, are you going to make Michael Jordan money? No. Okay. You're probably not. If you're a specialist, you're going to do better statistically than if you're a general dentist. But you can make $300,000 to $600,000 a year if you work on your practice and not just in your practice. You talked about earlier, doctor or dentist who shows up, give me a handpiece, give me my lunch, give me my paycheck, and leave me alone. That's not going to make your practice better. So going and talking about all the things that you talk about, case presentation and additional services and making sure that that schedule is full and making sure that I have a team. And talk about this, because you've had your own practice for many years, talking about having a team that gets it and that's on the same page, because that's how a dentist is going to make more money. It's not going to be by, you know, finding an accountant who's $100 a month cheaper. That's not how you're going to make money. Talk about how a dentist should be making more money in their practice.
And, you know, you said it so well, going and looking where to cut corners is what I see most dentists trying to do. And most of the time they're trying to cut corners on the wrong things. Like, let me find a cheaper accountant. Let me cut off some marketing that I'm doing. I think it requires you taking a look at what's working in your practice and what's not, right? If you can't track something, then it's not true. In our practices, every statistic is tracked against the previous month, against the previous quarter, against the previous year, because you need to know what's working. Right. You know, I think that the miracle bomb to so much of this is communication, right? When it comes down to how to lead a team, how to present a treatment plan, how to get your patients to a place of saying yes, which of course are all the little building blocks to how well your practice is doing year over year, how well you're doing, right? Those are all connected. You need to make sure that you've got systems in place that are going to make all of this happen. And our systems might be different than the next person's, but briefly, I will tell you that in our practices, all of our patients prepay. I am not the bank. I do not. If you go to Whole Foods, Art, and you fill up your cart, do you waltz out and say, bill me? You don't do that. You pay. Right. So I talked to a lot.
I tried that once and then the police showed up and it didn't go well.
Yeah. And so, you know, I talked to a lot of dentists that they're just, that's like a completely foreign concept for them. And when I say it like that with the Whole Foods analogy, they're like, oh, you know, like a light bulb goes on. So my patients all prepay. I'm not the bank. And the other thing is that our doctors tell patients how much things cost. Now, we do not whip out a calculator and calculate the copay for two fillings. We don't do that. But if someone looks at me and says, you know, that seems expensive, how much is that root canal or how much is that Invisalign or that implant going to be? We've trained our team to be confident to say it's $5,000. And that is a lot of money. It's okay to acknowledge that, but we have ways to make that affordable for you. So we give patients that respect, but we also ask for it in return. And those are two policies, two systems that we implemented that helped greatly.
I will tell you that you never, ever apologize for your fees.
Yep.
I can tell you that Mercedes-Benz, to buy a new S-Class, wants $140,000. And they don't apologize. And they shouldn't apologize because it's a fantastic machine.
Yep.
Okay. And you, doctor, who are doing a crown, who went to dental school for 4 years, who maybe did a general practice residency for another 1 year, who's done advanced training, who's going to COIST or SPEER or PANKI, who's as good as it gets, and I'm sure that's you, Dr. Patel, you know, you deserve and you have earned the right to charge $1,500, mm-hmm. $1,800 for a crown. Are you going to charge $4,000 for a crown? No, you're not. But, you know, and there are patients who, you know, there are patients who should shop at Whole Foods. There are patients who should shop at Gelson's. And there are patients who should shop at Target or Walmart. I mean, it's no different in dentistry than it is in the real world, right? I mean, you get what you pay for. And that's one of the whole things about having insurance in your practice and discounting your prices by, you know, 30 to 60% in some cases, you can't make a profit. It's a math problem. That's another podcast for you and I to do on another day. But yeah, I mean, please continue, Dr. Patel, to get on your pulpit and tell doctors about how they can become financially independent. And it's really not rocket science. It's just sitting down with a calculator. It's sitting down with an amortization program and just saying, what are my goals? What do I want to do? You know, does everybody want to fly first class? Sure. Okay. I mean, you and I have earned the right to fly first class. All right. When you look at the cost to fly first class for an 8-hour trip from the United States to Europe, and it's $16,000 or $20,000, I mean, if your name starts with Elon and ends with Musk, yeah, I guess you could do that, but he's probably got his own plane, right? But you know, does it make sense? And does it make you feel good? Yeah, it does. But does it allow you to meet your goals? No. So it's about coming to having a reality check that this is how life works. And if you want to do this, because here's what happens, doctor, and you can talk maybe about your dad, but at some point what happens is that doctors get tired and they want to play a little more. They don't want to work as hard. And there are some doctors that will die at the chair, but most of them are not that way. So what happens is that they end up going to work and they start being resentful. Well, my friends are retiring and my friends are traveling and my friends are spending more time with their grandchildren and my friends are doing this and they're picking up hobbies and I want to do that, but I can't afford to do that. That's why doctors is starting with a plan to get out of debt early. So I think we've got the message across. Just out of curiosity, do you happen to have your schedule either in your head as to where you're going to be starting, say, July, August, where you're speaking?
Yeah. So I will be at the AGD national meeting in Montreal on July 10th. And then I will be in September in California a number of times. So the International College of Dentists is having their convocation in San Diego nice. September 12th, 13th. And the San Diego Dental Society is putting on the CE portion with the International College of Dentists. So I'll be speaking there. And then we're doing a Now Plus Next at the Huntington in San Marino, is it?
Yep.
That's September 28th. And I will also be at the Maryland Dental Association meeting in September as well. So kind of all over the place as usual.
Well, again, as we talked before, we push the record button, say hi to one of my dearest friends in the whole world is the president of our National Academy of Dental CPAs, Alan Schiff. Alan is his dental CPA practice is in Towson, Maryland. And I would it'd be unbelievable if he was not going to be at that meeting, but he's going to be at that meeting, I'm sure. And I'm sure he's speaking there. So say hi to him. And if you are not working with a dental CPA, you should look us up at iBailey or a member of the Academy of Dental CPAs. That's www.adcpa.org. I am unfortunately, we're recording here, you and I, Dr. Patel, in early June, and I'm unfortunately going to miss my third Academy of Dental CPA meeting in 25 years since I helped form the group in 2001, as I am going to go, I'm going to be gone that week. So, but it is a great organization. So any final pieces of advice or tidbits for our audience based on your experience and debt and student loan debt that you want to share, and then we will wrap this up.
Sure. I mean, I think it's important to not let student debt or any debt, good debt, define your career or your peace of mind. Take the time to understand your options, track everything, and then build a strategy that works for you. Obviously, your dental education is an investment, right? You invested in yourself, you bet on yourself, which I think is the best bet that you can make. As long as it's managed wisely, it'll more than pay for itself over your career.
Absolutely right. Dr. Amrita Patel, you are a gem. I wish there were more of you. We need to clone you. Hopefully we don't have to go into debt to do that, but there you go. And I thank you for your time and your expertise. And it's a joy to have met you, and I really appreciate it. And hang with me as I take the podcast out. And folks, this podcast is a call to action. Every one of them is. I mean, you could go to a CE course that I put on and you'll get some tidbits. These podcasts are a call to action. I hope that after listening to this podcast, you're going to take a step back and you're going to talk to your significant other, if you have one, and you're going to say, hey, listen, we really need to take a look at where we're going and what we're doing. And if I have done that for at least one of you out of the thousands of people that listen to this podcast, then I have done my job and that is my legacy. So please don't get into credit card debt. don't forget about managing your student loan debt. There are good ways to do it and bad ways to do it. If you are looking for a dental CPA, we've got you covered at Eide Bailey. Call me at 657-279-3243 or email me at awiederman, that's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N, at eidebailey.com. Please go to the website of our wonderful partner, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine. 140 amazing continuing education classes, all clinical for a very, very reasonable price. Go to www.decisionsindentistry.com and also take a look at their dental marketing company, DDS Media Pro. And with that, Dr. Patel, thank you so much. And again, please stay with me once we take the podcast out. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for the honor and the privilege of your time. It is an honor and a privilege to do this work. It is a labor of love for me. As I told y'all, I got three happy places: on a golf course where I happen to be today, on a fly fishing stream or river, and in front of a microphone, either doing my podcast or a webinar or speaking to dental groups. And it is an honor and a privilege to serve the dental profession, which I have done over 41 years, and I love every minute of it. And with that, that is it for this edition of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast with Art Wiederman, CPA. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode. The Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast is produced by Eide Bailey in partnership with Art Wiederman, CPA, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, and the Academy of Dental CPAs. For audience questions and feedback, email Art Wiederman, awiederman@eidebailey.com. That's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at E-I-D-E-B-A-I-L-L-Y.com. Or you may call Art at 657-279-3243.